You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
In 2009, Erk went to the dark side and became a music podcaster. He discovered a wide, wide selection of music. Apart from Dozy Do by Julie the Band, it's now 2010 and Erk comes down the pipe and into your ears. Bigger, stronger and faster. Every Friday, it's Erk FM time. Now here's your host of Erk FM from Channel Erk, here's Erk.
G'day, I'm Erk, and welcome to episode 115 of Erk FM, quality, pod-safe and independent music. Down the pipe and into your ears at the end of each week. But it's Tuesday, so that means interview time, and we're going across the ditch, well, sort of, and you'll work out why in a moment. I'm talking with Kiwi singer-songwriter Jordan Rain. G'day, Jordan, how are you?
Hey, good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely super. Let's keep the Skype gods happy, shall we?
Mm-hmm. I hope they're with us on this one.
So I mentioned straight up that you're a Kiwi, but you're actually in Germany at the moment. That's a bit opposite from what I originally thought.
Yeah, the time difference is even worse than you thought. I'm in Hamburg at the moment, yes. I've been here for 4 years now.
And so New Zealand to Hamburg, that's a big difference. How did that come about?
Yeah, New Zealand is a small place, as I guess a lot of your listeners know, being in Australia as you are. Yeah, it's I play fringe kind of music. It's an odd mix of industrial sounds and folk stuff. So if you're playing on the fringes, you're always subject to a smaller chunk of the music listeners. And like 1% of people in New Zealand is probably two people. And if you move to Europe, 1% of the population is vastly, vastly bigger. So I thought that it was the best thing to do.
So why Germany? Any particular reason?
Strange reasons. I studied philosophy, and we did a lot of the German and French philosophers, and they were my favourite. France, I didn't want to go to because of the Rainbow Warrior, stupid as it sounds. I made the decision when I was rather young, so I eliminated France, and that left me with Germany. But also, it is a place that is kind of renowned for being keen on its experimental and particularly industrial music, which yes, I liked.
So, what is the music scene over there like for you?
It's odd and it's dispersed. There's a main centre which is sort of the Reeperbahn, and that's where a lot of people will spend their evening. But it's really just about selling booze there, so it's mostly cover stuff. As an originals musician, it's rough there. But if you know where to go, the small clubs are a lot more targeted in who will listen to you. So there's particular clubs for like EBM music, there's particular clubs for folk, there's particular clubs for rock or for metal. And so yes, it's quite specialised, given that there's the population to support that specialisation, which is what we didn't really have in New Zealand.
So you've been getting out there and you've been performing?
Yeah, for sure. I do about 10 shows a week at the moment, though the majority have become online shows, I have to say, because it's a lot easier to reach an international audience for a start, and the outlay is actually quite a lot less. It's zero. You've just got to invest your time in it, so there's no putting up posters and there's no currying interviews from radio and things like that. So it's quite efficient. You can get your 10 gigs done relatively easily.
And so you've got the name Jordan Rain. Any connection with James Rain, the artist that many Kiwis and Aussies would know?
Yeah, the connection was probably that I was thinking of him at the time, but no, his manager did actually contact me while I was still studying and asked if we were related, because he was doing some research, I think, into his background, and I stupidly told her immediately that, no, this is my stage name, which I possibly shouldn't have done, but yes, unfortunately, we're not related. It'd be cool if we were.
It must be a question that you get relatively often.
Only from Aussies and Kiwis.
And so are there many Kiwis in Germany?
There are some. We have an embassy, actually, in Hamburg. I was surprised to find out. And they have things like, when it's an election, they'll have parties and stuff. So I'm kind of, aware of them. And some of the people that I... Friday Drinks is a lot of expats, a lot of Aussies and Kiwis that are teaching English here, which is what I did for a bit while I was starting up when I got here. So, yeah, there are a few of us.
So that's good. So tell me a little bit about your industrial music. I know when we started podcasting here, we were learning about the different genres of music. I'm wondering, what exactly is industrial music and how does that apply to you?
Yeah, well, there's lots of different flavours of industrial, which is why it's a strange one. What I do is, industrial is almost the opposite from the genre I combine it with, which is folk music. I do sort of Celtic melodic vocal things, and I like to use folk instruments, but I also like to use machine noise, found sounds, so that's your factory ambiences that will set a key. So a lot of my songs are set inside some kind of droning factory. And things like simple chains going through pulleys or anvils banging on iron, steam sounds, I like to use those as percussion. So that's where industrial is for me. A lot of industrial bands that we think of as industrial, it'll actually be about the delivery. It'll be about if it's mechanical sounding, if it's very sort of machine oriented, and the delivery. Sometimes they do use machine noises as well, but a lot of it is very heavy rock. Some of it's electronic stuff. So it's a hard word to use. I certainly like it more than singer songwriter. I apologise for saying, but that has become a genre of its own as well, the singer songwriter thing, and that's not what I do. I try and use found sound with instrumentation. I do all of that stuff myself, so it's a far cry from that kind of verse chorus ballad thing. I like to keep it a little bit harsh. That sort of, I guess, the bittersweet side of it comes from that meeting of humans and folk stories, human narratives, but with machines playing their role as they do in our everyday lives.
So how exactly do you find these industrial sounds? You just can't go to an industrial site and record, can you?
Oh, sometimes you can, yes. For the new album, it was fairly easy because I wanted to put this character, it's a narrative about this particular woman that came over from Gravesend in England, and she lived in a place called Karamea in New Zealand, which was a disastrous kind of settlement, and she was there in the 1870s, so I just looked at what was around in terms of machinery then. So yeah, you've got your hammers banging on steel, you've got people using the various things that they use to herd the cows, to cut trees down. I've got saws in there, I've got the steamships in there that they had at the time. So in terms of the steamships, obviously, there aren't steamships. You go and you find your steam elsewhere, like trains or whatever, and use it. Chains going through pulleys are fairly easy. There's a lot of them still around. Not a lot has changed down there. So a lot of the old farming implements you can find, and you can just start banging bits of metal together and record them. So that was fairly easy. For previous albums where I've used like the droning engine room thing, some of them I sampled myself because I was lucky enough to know some people that worked in factories, and others I just gave up. I couldn't actually get some of the high tones that ring there, so I would use the BBC sample library. They've got some really good sounds off the insides of factories.
And so how do you convert the sounds that you've recorded or that you've otherwise obtained into your songs? How do you do that, especially if you're live?
Oh, yes, live is very tricky. In terms of recording, there's a lot of filtering and cleaning up that goes on for a start because it's quite hard to isolate some of the ones I use as percussion. So I do a lot of filtering, a lot of fiddling about. And then once I've done that, there's a program called Reason. It's one of the key bits of software I use where you can load it into what looks like the old school samplers, but it's in software. And you'll use a MIDI note in your main sequencer to just call up that sound when you need it. So that gives you the power to call up that sound on the beat, on the first beat of the bar, on the second beat of the bar, whatever you like. So that's how I use it in recording. Live, I tend not to rely on samplers. I'll tend to actually play the folk instruments myself. I sing myself, and I'll loop those things as I go in layers. Then I'll bring in the machine stuff as a backing track. I'll just trigger it with my foot when they come in and build up the other stuff that I'm doing live on top of that.
And what sort of reaction do you get from people? They might see a woman with a guitar, I'm presuming, as well, and how do they react?
Yeah, they see a woman with a guitar, and, well, the biggest problem I have is engineers. They see a woman with a guitar, and they'll just turn the machine stuff down, like they don't know what to do with it. So I get my own engineers now, because they know that it's meant to be really loud. It's an integral part of what I do. Like I said, with the singer-songwriter thing, there's a lot of assumption that if you're a female with a guitar that you're doing kind of semi-sad, as in mood, kind of songs with verse, chorus, verse, and that's really not what I'm about. So it is tricky to get people to understand that you're using machines as a musical instrument and as a kind of legitimate part of the band, I guess, as well, once you're up there performing. But, yeah, it's just a matter of finding the right people.
So we were talking a bit earlier about genres and how you classify yourself. What do you think of bands who tick every single box when they're submitting their music to a site such as Reverb Nation or Aerial Publicity that you use?
Well, I guess for the listener it's tricky because if you're searching for blues music and you meet someone who's doing indie pop that's just ticked the blues box, then you're going to be a bit confused. And certainly I know a lot of people will do that so that they'll get as many returns as possible, but I'm guessing that the bounce rate is pretty high, because if you're searching for something specific and you don't find it, then as a listener you're possibly disappointed. As a musician it's quite difficult, particularly, well, I find it difficult, because when you're combining genres like industrial and... from the listener's perspective, I think we covered that one, eh?
Yeah.
From the listener's perspective it's pretty tricky, but from the musician's perspective, it's tricky too, because, for example, I'll check industrial and folk and alternative. Those are my three. But if you're looking for industrial music and you find me, you're probably expecting that you'll hear something like Ministry or Nine Inch Nails, and that's not what I do. So it's kind of a bit too, I guess, soft for those sorts of people. If they're looking for folk and they come across me, then they hear the machine noise. So really... the genre thing is quite limiting, and it forces bands really to just find a box and sit in it, which I think is relatively destructive in terms of innovation, because if you play a genre or are trying to combine genres where you get that kind of mixed reaction from listeners seeking something specific, then it's not really inviting to combine different things or to try something new.
So let's talk about some of the subjects that I like talking about with all of the artists. How do you get your inspiration for your music?
I would probably say a combination of stories and sounds from a natural or unnatural environment, depending on what you think of factory noises. The main thing that inspires me to write is really finding a story, like with the new album, the story of this woman who gave up her middle-class existence to go to this promised land, which was actually what it'd be like to do that. And the story is what, basically, the narratives are the thing that draw me into the act of writing. If I find a cool story, like Susanna's story and her struggle with the character history, not to be forgotten, which she actually is. And that's what sets up the framework for me to write something. It's the interest in the story, but also the character and what they would have had around them, sort of sonically in her case, looking for the bits of machinery that would have been the kind of backdrop to her existence. So, yeah, it's stories, I think, that inspire me, and then the kinds of sounds that would be attached to those stories.
So I'll ask the question I ask all the artists. It's probably my favourite question of all. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're asleep, and you have an awesome idea. What do you do?
I get up and write it down, or record it. I will never ignore it. Never ignore it, because if I do, it's gone in the morning. Often I think that I can remember it, and from experience, I can't. So I just get up and write it down. It's an incredible way. It's one minute you get, and then a couple of seconds.
It sounds like making a phone call from a public telephone box, and you've only got 20 cents to put the money in, and you've got to get your message out really quick.
Yeah. I'm being structured by the phone call time frame and my answers. 1 minute answers. Maybe we could start with The Dead.
Sure. And tell us a bit about The Dead. What's that about?
Okay, now that's the whole album is the story of this woman, this pioneer, and and her struggle with another character, History, not to be overlooked. But History, of course, wants blood and gore and drama and things. So she basically tries to have Susanna killed off throughout a lot of the album. In the end, she does actually manage and throw Susanna's name in the sea to forget about her. But the dead is when Death is actually talking to Susanna and telling her essentially why History wants to forget her, because she's unimportant.
And here we are now. This is Jordan Rain with her song, The Dead.
Sage out of a dry dark night. Just sit here and wait for the steamers to sail. The quiet earth turns in its sleep, and the mountains fall into the sea, and there's nothing else but waiting, waiting. As History shook her tired head, I spoke with a man who was already dead. Through the yellow clouds of nicotine, he waves dismissive hand to me. He said, "You don't know that you're nothing." I don't like the words of pain, and really I'm only waiting, but it feels like something. Of nicotine, he waves dismissive hands at me. Said, "You don't know that you're nothing. Yeah, don't know that you're nothing. You don't know you're nothing. You don't know that you're nothing." Sage out of a dry dark, and I just sit here and wait for the steamers to sail. Thank you.
Welcome back to Irk FM episode 115, and on the line we have Jordan Rain calling us from Hamburg in Germany. We just heard her song called The Dead, and so let's go back a bit, not so much near the death frame, but more towards the start. How did you get started in music in the first place?
I grew up in a really remote area of the West Coast on the South Island in New Zealand. And I sang to myself a lot. I told myself stories. There are a lot of sort of bits of old abandoned farm stuff around, and I think that's where I got my interest in the sound of metal, because I couldn't play an instrument. I was quite young, so I would just bang bits of metal together and sing to myself and sort of adventure through the grasses and over to the beach where the sea on three sides. And yes, I think that's I just became aware of the sounds of my environment and really enjoyed being a part of them and contributing to them. Yes, since I was quite young.
And so when did you decide that you had some talent and that you were going to carry on with it?
I guess I didn't. My parents kind of got sick of me banging bits of metal together and sent me to learn the guitar. And my guitar teacher really liked my voice and told me that I should keep going and do something with music. The thing was, I enjoyed it anyway, so I think with anything that you really do love and are passionate about, you'll keep doing it. The capacity in which you do it may change, and it may be very difficult at times, which often it was, but just because of the enjoyment I get from the act of writing and performing, I think I would have kept going anyway.
And so how old were you when you were going through this stage of playing the guitar and no longer just clacking two bits of metal together?
Yeah, I started learning when I was about, I think, nine years old. And the teacher was Mr. Birmingham. He's a folk musician too, which is pretty cool. So I guess he influenced me there. But yeah, I started playing guitar when I was 9 years old.
And so do you follow many Kiwis around on the in the music world to see how they're going? Do you hear much Kiwi music?
We don't get a lot of it over here. Though a few things do make it over here. The Flight of the Conchords, of course, which is a raging success, got as far as here as well, which is awesome. I find them fantastic. No, I follow bands who are from New Zealand, but that don't really come through here because they weren't mainstream. They're mainly gothic bands and industrial bands that I liked while I was there, so I follow them from this side of the world.
And how have you used the internet in terms of things like social networking? We really sort of connected via Twitter. I think you just chucked out a message out there and I answered.
Yeah, no, the Twitter thing's quite funny. I do really like a lot of the aspects of the social networking, just that you can... Well, when you're living overseas too, it becomes as simple as being able to spy on your friends because they'll put their photos up. You know, the last weekend I was at this party, and you can sort of feels like you were there. But yeah, the opportunities to meet new people too are, of course, there, and that's a really cool thing as well. I think the social networking side, it takes time if you treat it like it's a job, but being overseas, it's something that you end up doing anyway because it's the only way to stay in touch with the people that are part of your life.
When we had the recent earthquakes in Christchurch, did you get many phone calls, people worried about you, even though you're on the other side of the world?
Yeah, I was online, and a bunch of Americans said, "Are you okay?" I'm like, why? So, because New Zealand, there was one with a tidal wave as well, before the Christchurch incident, and they wanted to know if I was all right. I said, look, I live in Germany. And they're like, oh, but with the earthquake, they were just like, well, you better check with your family that they're okay. So I first heard about it while I was on Second Life. I'd just finished a show, and some people said, you better check that your family are all right, because they'd heard about the Christchurch thing.
And so you mentioned a little bit about Second Life there. Why don't you tell people who maybe aren't familiar with it what Second Life is and what you were doing there?
It's hard to tell people what it is. A lot of people will call it a game. It's not really a game. It's just I would say it's a place to be. That's not a place. It's software. It's cyberspace, and there's a massive music scene there, and that's why I'm there. I do like I say, I do about 10 shows a week, and probably 7 of them are in Second Life, and you play live, and people can hear you from all over the world. They have an avatar, right? So my avatar will play the little guitar there, and it's me singing and streaming from where I am in the world, and the listeners come from wherever they are in the world with their avatars. And they'll tip you, the venues pay you. I earn my living, basically, in Second Life and from real-life gigs. But the real-life gigs, like I said before, there's a lot of outlay, so sometimes you just break even. In Second Life, it's always profitable.
Well, I wouldn't have thought there would have been enough money in it for you to be able to sustain it, basically. That's very interesting.
Oh, you have to work it. You have to work it. I've been in there for 7 months now, and I started off earning. I don't know if I could pay my grocery bill, but now it more than pays the rent on its own as that one source of income. So you do have to build it up, and you do have to get to a point where you can say to venues that they need to pay you, because you've got X number of fans and they will come along and they will tip the venue, so the venue knows that they'll get at least X number of dollars from you even being there. So it's taken 7 months and a lot of work, but yes, it can be done. And I have several friends that earn really, really decent amounts of money. They've been there for 2 years, and one in particular, he's really quite well off. He's built that up over that time, and he only plays in Second Life exclusively, and that's his job. He's a rock star in Second Life.
So how does it work? Like, you obviously sign up for an account, and so when you first get in there with your little avatar and your little guitar, do you go to like a phone box first and start playing a bit of a tune there, or do you just go to a main stadium? Well, how does it work?
the visuals of that were really cute. It's, I guess you could say that's more or less what happens. People have built places there, right? Be that some pretty field with a waterfall behind it, or a venue that, you know, is made out of cogs and wheels and things. I play a lot of the steampunk venues, or if it's just some tin shed. One of the places I play at is called The Shed. It's an Australian sim. So you play at whatever place where they can hook it up so that your stream is broadcast into that particular area. So these areas are called sims, right? So you have a sim and it's got some kind of building on it, or it's just a field or whatever. It's how the owners make it. And the owner can hook up your stream, which is your music, right? That can hook up the stream to that sim so that anyone on that sim can hear what you're doing. So often, obviously, it comes with stage and all that sort of stuff because they're fairly traditional about it. But sometimes you can just stand there and have them hook it up and you're singing. You're singing to whoever wanders past.
So what do you see? I know you were saying that people see the little avatar of you with the guitar. What are you seeing when you're playing? Do you see the crowd?
Yeah, I do. So I log on like everyone else, and I've got everyone has their avatar, which is basically their center point from which you see. Well, you see from just behind the avatar, so you get to know the back of your avatar's head really well, and you see whatever's in front of it. And I just see that. So when my avatar's on the stage playing guitar, my perspective is as if I was standing just behind her. And I see all the people out there who are watching, and everyone's got the name over their head, which is quite cool because you can say hello to everyone. And the thing I really like about Second Life is, unlike real life gigs, there's this chat thing, so people can just sort of say things to you while you're playing, and so between the songs you can have proper conversations with people, and you can crack jokes, and it's really, really interactive. Ironically, it's a lot more intimate than when you play in real life, because in real life, you can never really hear what people are saying unless they're kind of heckling loudly or they're standing in the front row. So there's not as much interaction in terms of genuine reply to people's comments. So I really like that about Second Life.
So you miss the interaction when you go to a quote-unquote real performance?
Yeah, I do. It's a whole different kettle of fish, actually. RL has its advantages, of course. There's nothing like playing live in real life, but it is also fraught with its difficulties and the part where you really are just on stage, and you're kind of isolated from the people in the room. There is a kind of you get a certain vibe when you're playing live, and you know that there is a feedback loop going on. It's just quite a different feedback loop from the one that goes on in Second Life, where it is really, really intensely more personal. It means if anyone's saying nasty things, of course, you can see that too. But, you know, there's ways of dealing with it as there are in real life.
What, throwing something at them?
Yeah. Well, no one can die in Second Life. That's the downside. But, no, you can have them banned and things. There are, I think they call themselves grifers. They're usually teenagers that just like to sort of go around and find out where there's lots of people and wreak havoc. So on the odd occasion, you do get people to come in and do that, and you can just ban them, which is not like when you're playing in a club. If you've got a club and a big fight breaks out in front of you, there's not a lot you can do. Not that that happens very often, but but it's nice to know in Second Life that you can just get rid of them.
So are you a gamer as well? Do you play things such as like Guitar Hero, Rock Band, all that sort of stuff as well?
Oh, no. I have played online games, though. When I was a teenager, I really liked something called EverQuest. I don't know if you've heard of that. I think it was a precursor to World of Warcraft, or at least sort of began it around that time, sort of the mid-90s. So I've played online role-playing games, but yeah, the music games are not my thing. What I like about Second Life is it's not a game at all. You're playing there live. You've got all of your gear in front of you. If you make a mistake, it's just like making a mistake on the stage. You know, everyone hears it and you feel stink. But if you get it right, you get exactly the same. The real buzz of the fact that this is you doing what you do, and that there's people out there reacting to it and enjoying it. And yeah. So that's why it's difficult to describe Second Life. It's not a game, I suppose. It's just a way of getting people into the same space without them really being in the same space.
So does that convert into things like downloads and album sales and that sort of thing? You know, people hear you in Second Life and then they want to hear what you've done before?
Yep, absolutely. That's the wonderful thing about it is a lot of people say, well, you know, it kind of doesn't exist because it's set up as software, you know, as World of Warcraft or some actual game might be. But no, the money they tip you, you can cash that out into PayPal. So there's, of course, a source of income anyway. And the majority of my sales now come from people who I know I've met in Second Life, because obviously I see their emails when the orders come through. So yes, it translates into sales.
That's pretty awesome. So you mentioned the difference between playing live and playing live in Second Life. What about the recording studio? Have you had many good experiences there?
Oh, I love the recording studio. Yes, it's well, more so now that I have my own, because you can spend an infinite amount of time just getting things, trying things out, and experimenting, and you know that the clock isn't ticking in terms of money and things. So I've always done a lot of the production myself, and then gone to a studio to get the vocal takes and to get things nicely mixed and mastered. But yes, now I can do actually almost all of that at home, and just being able to experiment, being able to do what I call the car crash method, which is a method I operate on a lot, which is just to put two sounds together and see if it sounds any good. If it doesn't, you try something else. But it can take a long time, so if you're paying for the studio, obviously it's not a good plan. But with my engine rooms, for example, I'll set up some kind of a drone and I'll just see what instrument fits best. Is it strings, or what kind of a melodic structure is going to fit with this particular constant drone of A that's going on, and I'll just try things and then erase them. So I love the studio. It's like a blank canvas and you've got all the colours in the world.
Especially now, as you say, that you're not, the meter's not ticking, because I found talking with other bands, the meter ticking can be a big inhibitor to their performance.
Absolutely. I do notice too that, because like I say, I've always gone to studios to get the vocal takes, because I haven't had good microphones before. Of course, all the sequencing stuff you can do on your own PC. But yeah, turning up in the studio and having to sing there in that sort of the same manner with the same kind of delivery, particularly when it's something intimate and quiet, the stress and the ticking clock makes it quite hard to achieve. And I've found that my vocal takes are a lot better when I do them at home. And now that I've got the right gear, it's definitely a better performance that comes out.
No, that's really cool. So before we go, We should hear another song, and both of these songs that we've played are related to death. This one's called The Proximity of Death.
Yeah, it's about the different ways there are to die in Pioneer New Zealand. There's not just three, but I thought people would get the idea after three.
So here we are. This is Jordan Rain with her song, The Proximity of Death.
There's only 6 miles of bad road between you and I. Only 6 miles of bad road and blue sky. If you get here fast, you won't feel his breath. You won't catch his eye. And I'll count the time and I'll watch the days till he makes you fly. Oh, oh, oh. There's only 3 feet of shallow water between you and I. It isn't deep, but it's just enough to make sure that I. And if you swim to the edge of things where the earth meets the sky, he will meet you there in the setting sun with his empty eyes. Oh. Oh, how do you like your blue red boy? How do you like your blue red boy? How do you like him? How do you like him? How do you like him? It's a short, sharp drop past 3 flights of stairs between you and I. Oh, it isn't far, and you'll get there fast, 'cause you're so fragile. Will you see his smile? Will you taste his song as you vanish by? You'll feel his hands, and they're cold like bone, but they're gone with time.
Welcome back to episode 115 of IRC FM. The Skype gods have been a bit more nicer to us over the last 15 minutes or so, which is nice. Jordan, why don't you tell us the different ways to find you on the interweb?
The interweb? There's, yes, you can, if in doubt, you can type Jordan Rain to Google, and usually the first thing that comes up is my website, but my website is jordanrain.com. But J-O-R-D-A-N-R-E-Y-N-E, jamesrain.com. I'm on Facebook as well, and the usual social network things, Twitter, but the main site is just my main website, jordanrain.com.
Awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure having a chat with you, Skype problems aside. What's coming up in the future for you?
There is a new album in the mix already. It's another narrative, another concept album. But yes, parts of it shall remain secret, but expect a very dark folk tale with lots of steam, salt, and sea shanties in it. So yes, an industrial alternative folk again, but with some very interesting stories behind it.
Now we've played a couple of your songs, and they've all been, you know, sort of death related. But you sound such a bright and chirpy person. That's a very big contradiction.
A lot of people say that. For me, death is, I think it comes up a lot in my songs because it's something that's about the end of phases. It's about the importance. Death is what makes life important. If we were immortal, the importance of choices would be greatly reduced. And in particular with the story that I'm following with Susanna, if you have an infinite period of time, you say, well, right now it's too risky to go to this new land. How about I just wait a couple of centuries and let other people sort this out? It's death that makes the fact that we're alive something special and something weighted and something where it's deeply a part of who we are. What we decide, we have to live with, and that this is the only chance we get. So I guess that's why death comes up a lot. Also, there's also the working out of what is life all about for me. And a lot of my work does delve into that realm, is what is the story behind what we're here for? Is there a story behind what we're here for? Is it just a story that we make up, or is it something that we are supposed to figure out and follow?
Do you find yourself that you have to get into a certain headspace to be able to create that atmosphere?
Definitely. In terms of, like I said, when I'm in the studio, writing in the studio, I can't really handle it when there's anyone in the house, even if that's my partner. So it's kind of good when he's on a shift. That means I've got the house to myself in the day. So there's that, just the knowing I'm not going to be interrupted. I'll turn the phones off. I have a pathological dislike of phones. My cell phone is permanently off, just about. and it's partly because of that. I just need to know that that it's kind of like a blank canvas where there are no ripples, and whatever I put on it will be the only thing that's on it sonically, that I won't be interrupted.
Awesome. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Don't forget to keep in contact with us and let us know when the new album comes out.
Will do, for sure.
You've been listening to Irk on episode 115. We've Kiwi turned lady in Germany, Jordan Rain. Thanks, Jordan.
You're most welcome.
No worries. Good night, interweb. See you next week. You have been listening to a Channel Irk production. Channel Irk and all 5 podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative, share-alike license registered in Australia. Music is used with direct permission or under agreements with various music providers. All rights to the music contained within remains with the original rights holder. Some sound effects are sourced from the Free Sound Project under Creative Commons. For more information about Channel Irk, go to www.channelirk.com.